Missing this?
I remember Ollie texted me Solskjaer. One or two people would get hold of my number, unfortunately, and he would text me.
Then get this, the all-new OTB Sports app. Off the Ball, Ireland's premier sports channel, now has a new home, featuring the biggest names in Irish and world sports. Podcasts, interviews, news, commentary, analysis, plus almost 20 years of sporting archives. All free and ready when you are, at home or on the go. The new OTB Sports app. Download it now from the App Store and Google Play.
The OTB Podcast Network.
The Paddy Power Half Hour on Off the Ball
with Paddy Power, the greatest football partnership since Shearer and Owen.
You're very welcome into this Friday's edition of the Paddy Power Half Hour. We are looking ahead to the 139th edition of the oldest cup competition in football. It's the FA Cup final, pitting London rivals Arsenal and Chelsea against each other in what will be an empty Wembley Stadium tomorrow. The game also represents an opportunity for the Gunners coach Mikel Arteta and Blues boss Frank Lampard to land their first ever trophies in management. We will be discussing odds over the next half hour or so. For information on responsible gambling, check out Dunleavy.net. I'm joined in OTB Towers by Enda Cole. Enda, good afternoon to you.
Well, how are you doing?
We're looking forward to, I think, what on the face of it's a pretty interesting FA Cup final for a variety of reasons, really. Both teams can change the outlook of their season quite a bit by winning this competition. Arsenal, as you mentioned last week when we were looking at the last weekend of the Premier League, have finished outside the top six for the first time in a quarter of a century. While for Chelsea, top four would have been one of their priorities, but a chance for them to win a cup tomorrow evening too.
Yeah, but the main question here, Will, though, is has the FA Cup lost its magic? Is that not the question everyone asked before an FA Cup game, no matter what league or what round we're in? We're going into the final. It's Chelsea against Arsenal, two of the top teams in England. And I guarantee you that'll still be a question at the end of this is whether or not this cup has lost its magic. I think it's still a top-class competition when it gets to the final couple of rounds. And I mean, ultimately, that's what we're looking for. We're not looking for a round one fixture. We're looking forward to the top teams taking on each other in a knockout competition. Arsenal this year haven't been great overall, but I think that's sort of an Arsenal thing over the last 10, 15 years is that in the league, they haven't really been doing anything. But when it came to FA Cup games, they've been absolutely brilliant. So I fully expect Arsenal to put up a fight here.
Well, look, when it comes to the pedigree of this competition, you mentioned, you know, the magic and the idea of, you know, shocks and so on. And maybe in some of the previous years, we've had one particularly strong team from the top four facing a team who they were likely to beat easily in the final. At this time round, you've got two of the Premier teams from the Premier League and also two teams who've knocked out some of the big guns on the way. You know, Chelsea have accounted for Liverpool and Manchester United in the latter stages of the competition. And I was very impressed, I don't know about you, by how Arsenal played against the holders Man City in the semis.
Well, judging on Arsenal's performances throughout the league this year, they have been atrocious. But over the last couple of weeks, and I don't want to say that they're on the way back up because they've had multiple false dawns under Arteta this season and sort of throughout his tenure at the club. So it's hard to know where Arsenal are at. They take one leap forward for a couple of weeks and then they drop off again, and it sort of ties in with David Luiz's form. Is he the defender that's going to cement that Arsenal defence, and or is he the defender that's going to be the laughing stock off that defence? So they've been all over the place. It's hard to know where they're actually at. But if they continue the form that they've been in over the last 4 weeks and not fall off the cliff like they have done, then they do have a real chance against Chelsea here, because Chelsea's defence is awful. We all know that. They've conceded more goals than Brighton this year, and from corners, they're really not good at defending them. So it's going to be an interesting final, Will.
Well, our sponsors, Paddy Power, have priced the game as follows. To lift the cup tomorrow evening, Chelsea, best price of Paddy Power, 4-7. Arsenal 11-8, and that includes no matter what way it's won, even if it's won on spot kicks, to win inside 90 minutes. Chelsea, the marginal favourites again, 11-10. Arsenal 23-10, and a draw is 12-5. So it's very clear that Paddy Power think, Enda, that Chelsea are going to prevail tomorrow, and Frank Lampard, a man who won the cup four times as a player, will be winning it as a manager.
Well, listen, Will, we all know how good a job Frank Lampard did this year, because we haven't stopped being told how good a job Lampard has done this year. He's taken them from third position in a Europa League to fourth position, and a potential FA Cup. So ultimately, like, I am taking the piss a little bit with one of this Lampard conversation, because he has done a decent job, in fairness to him. If you look at where Chelsea were beforehand, the transfer ban that they got and losing Hazard, their best player, he has developed a system and a team that has got themselves in a position that where we never really thought they would be at the start of the season. If you look at some of the off-the-ball predictions, I'm not sure many people actually predicted them to be in the top six, let alone the top four. So it's been a mixed bag of a season for Lampard. The key issue for Lampard is, if they win this trophy, is that the stepping stone that they need to go on and be successful as a team? And sometimes that's what it takes, especially as a younger manager. If you look at, in the past, the likes of Mourinho, who had success in the Portuguese league, and then the real stepping stone for him as a manager was winning that Champions League with Porto, or winning the UEFA Cup the year before they won the Champions League. That was the stepping stone that they used as Jose Mourinho's booster as a manager and his reputation. And the likes of Klopp, when he eventually won a trophy with Borussia Dortmund, Pep, when he came into Barcelona, when he developed his team, the first thing they need to do is secure a trophy. And if Frank Lampard can get that in his first season at Chelsea, then that's a real success for him. And it could lead to him developing his game plan forward and becoming a real force as a manager in worldwide football.
I think if I was a Chelsea fan at the moment, and I'd be reasonably excited. They finished in the top four, which I guess people thought was going to be tricky, particularly with Eden Hazard leaving the club, given that I think it's six academy players have made their debut during the season. Players have come back in, like Tammy Abraham and Mason Mount, and have been given chances this year because they weren't able to spend money last season. Their squad was maybe a little bit small at times, but look at the attacking options that they're purchasing for next season, getting ready to go back into the Champions League. You've got potentially Kai Havertz coming in on the back of Hakim Ziyech, and also an exciting left-sided attacker who can play up front in Timo Werner. I know they probably need to find a goalkeeper given Kepa's issues this season, and Willy Caballero is not the right man to step in. But I think if Chelsea get a defensive coach and a goalkeeper on top of these attacking players that they brought in, Chelsea could be a force not just in the Premier League, but unlike this season where they looked absolutely outgunned in the Champions League by Bayern Munich, Chelsea could be a force in Europe again.
Well, you see, that's one of the key issues, though, is they're bringing in all these attacking players. Where do they fit in is the first question for me, because if you look at their team in the last couple of weeks, certainly Christian Pulisic seems to be the best attacking option they have at the minute, but he's not starting for them. He's coming off the bench. I don't know if that's Frank Lampard saving him for the FA Cup final, making sure that he's not getting injured. But if you look at their front four, Hakim Ziyech, Timo Werner, Tammy Abraham, Christian Pulisic, like, is he going to go with a four up front and then two midfield with Kante and someone else? If it's Kai Havertz going into a two-man midfield, you'd really wonder what they're going to do defensively. So ultimately, all the good work that Frank Lampard has done, bringing in all the youth this year, could be thrown to the wayside if they start becoming the Chelsea of the past, the purchasing club who don't develop their youth team, they develop all their players from the transfer market. So it's going to be interesting over the next couple of years. I'd be shocked if they don't buy a defender, because, I mean, left back alone, Marcus Alonso has been passing for the last 3 years. He doesn't have the legs anymore. He was a great wing back when Conte first came to the club and that title winning side, obviously. But they need a new left back. Ben Chilwell is the obvious option there. But do they have the money to do that if they go out and spend 70 million on Kai Havertz? Chelsea have really gone in and taken a leap of faith and done what other clubs haven't done this summer, because if they've already spent money on Timo Werner, Hakim Ziyech, and if they're going to spend 70 million on Kai Havertz and then a keeper as well coming in to replace the most expensive keeper of all time, they're taking a chance that the market's going to be the same market that we're used to, with players going for 70 million plus. Whereas all the reports seem to say that this transfer market could regress to where we were in like the 2009-2010 period, where 50 million gets you what we would consider a 90 to 100 million player now.
The inverse of that would be, though, and I'm just thinking back to Miguel Delaney from The Independent, who was on Wednesday night on Off the Ball speaking about the transfer market and how deflated it feels this summer because of the global economic situation. Financial fair play is unlikely to be determined by this year by UEFA. And we've even seen that Manchester City were able to go and fight financial fair play all the way to the Court of Arbitration for Sport. So in many ways, if Roman Abramovich is willing to put capital into the club, Chelsea have got money to spend this summer. And you could argue that if you're someone who's sitting there with cash, this is a really good summer to go into the market if you want to make a splash.
What it actually shows as well is the difference between being friends with the owner and just being another employee. Because if you look at Maurizio Sarri, he had a real battle trying to get any sort of money from Abramovich, and even Abramovich's role within the club was in question. We weren't even sure if he was going to sell it, if the new stadium development was ever going to happen. And now at Chelsea, it seems to be Frank Lampard has gone in, and we all know how pally he is from his days of playing at Chelsea with Abramovich, and he's basically got a blank check again. So if Abramovich is willing to spend for Chelsea where other clubs are not willing to spend, I know for like United, Manchester United have been a little bit more, I don't know, cautious approaching transfers going into the summer. They haven't gone full in for Jadon Sancho yet. That may change over the next couple of weeks. But even Man City, I know 41 million sounds like a lot for a relegated defender, but they've gone out and got a Premier League standard defender for 40 million. That doesn't always happen. And you'd expect the likes of Nathan Ake to go for maybe 50 million plus in other years. So it'll be interesting to see if Chelsea manage to sweep up the market, if they can afford it, then they will be real challengers next year for the Premier League. But I think they definitely need at least two defenders if they're going to get anywhere near where Liverpool are at.
The importance of this game for Arsenal in terms of Mikel Arteta, he's come in on the back of what's been a messy season. First of all, with Unai Emery, things really didn't look good at the start of the season, and it felt like it was just a matter of time before he would leave the club. That eventually happened. Arsene Wenger's successor is gone. We get Freddie Ljungberg coming in for a brief period. Things hadn't quite settled. That first part of the season was a big part of why Arsenal finished in mid-table. And then Mikel Arteta comes in, and some really impressive results, particularly in recent times, and he's put his own stamp on things. He's had a bit of a play around with the tactics. I think eventually he wants to get to a system that's not too dissimilar to what Man City are playing currently. We saw how he used that system against Man City in a semi-final. He has ditched Guendouzi and Ozil, who he didn't see as part of his plans. He has moved Aubameyang into a different position, which has got Aubameyang back playing really well again. How much credit does Mikel Arteta have to take, considering they've beaten Man City and Liverpool in recent weeks, for the turnaround in Arsenal's fortunes from the time that he took over from Freddie Ljungberg?
Well, I think he deserves all the credit that he gets, because I think we all expected him to go in and have something about him because of his work with Guardiola in the past and how highly rated he was as a player as well. Sometimes the best players don't make the best managers, but that seems to be a curve that's changing with the new managers coming in. And I suppose the first thing that he did with Arsenal, and something that would give me a bit of hope if I were an Arsenal fan, would be just the fact that he takes no bullshit, that he's not having players who have egos in his team, the likes of Guendouzi, who's supposed to be a bad influence around training. Once these things started to turn, they were out of the team. If he didn't fancy Ozil, if Ozil's work rate wasn't there, he was out of the team. And David Luiz, when he made his couple of mistakes in pre-season, or the second pre-season, if you want to call that, before they returned, he was dropped. And the only reason he came on for that calamitous game where he gave away two penalties was because they were forced to do so through injury. So Arteta has a lot of bottle about him by the looks of it. As a manager, he takes no shit, which is good for Arsenal because that's what they need. They need a manager who's going to come in and get all of these mixed up puzzles and start to put it together and make an actual squad that functions properly. Aubameyang's an interesting one because obviously he was the second top goal scorer in the Premier League this year. His record for Arsenal is insane, but his contract is up now at the end of the season once this FA Cup's over, and there hasn't really been any sign of him signing a new deal. So that's going to be vital important for Arteta going forward in the next season or so. If they have to go out and try to replace Aubameyang, a 23-24-goal-a-year striker, they're going to have to spend a bit of money, and we all know that Arsenal don't have the same money as everyone else. So Arteta's got a real job in his hands over the next couple of years to try build up Arsenal to where they were before Arsene Wenger retired from the job or was sacked from the job. And this FA Cup final could also be a springboard, like it would be a springboard for Frank Lampard to develop this Chelsea team into title contenders. This FA Cup could be a springboard for Arteta to develop these Arsenal players into top four contenders again.
I think, look, understandably, Arsenal fans get a bit spooked when it comes to contract situations. They've had this happen with Nasri, with Fabregas, with Van Persie. And in all those cases, the players, when they got down into the final 12 months of their contract, the club had to look for some kind of value and to sell them as opposed to letting them go for free. Aubameyang's a difficult one because he's got just under a year left now at this point. He has definitely wavered about the idea of signing. Maybe the market means that Inter Milan or Barcelona can't come in for him as people would have expected. But I would imagine if you're Arsenal and you want to keep him and you want to buy some time to be able to convince him to put pen to paper on that deal, the best thing to possibly do is to hand him a medal tomorrow evening.
Yeah, and if he sees that the tide is turning, I mean, he's not getting any younger. Aubameyang's in his 30s now, so is he going to get that big move to someone else? I don't think he will. I mean, I know Manchester United signed Van Persie as a 28-year-old, but Van Persie was very much at his peak, and I suppose you can say that Aubameyang's at his peak, but he was also firing goals in for Borussia Dortmund the whole time, so it's hard to know whether he's at his peak now or whether he's actually just at that point of no return where in the next few years the injuries will start coming in, the goals will start drying up. So it would be almost like an Everton thing to do, to go and buy the likes of Aubameyang and then for him to be injured for most of the season. But if Arsenal can get him signed up, he's going to be important over the next couple of years. And an FA Cup final, FA Cup medal, if they win it, then he might see that, you know, things are starting to turn under Arteta. Stay here for a few years, you'll get Champions League football again, and you might retire on a high with a couple of medals in your back pocket from Arsenal.
Press conferences are coming up in a few minutes' time. There'll be Zoom press conferences ahead of the game at Wembley tomorrow. We might get more of a bit of detail in terms of injuries, but all feeling seems to be, Enda, that it's going to be Jorginho who's going to play at the base of the midfield for Chelsea tomorrow evening because N'Golo Kante isn't fit. He's not back from this thigh problem. So therefore, Jorginho, a guy who could well leave Chelsea at the end of this summer, given Juventus are reportedly quite interested in bringing him in under his old boss, Maurizio Sarri. It looks like it's going to be Jorginho's passing as opposed to Kante's energy around the middle of the field that's at least going to play in that position for Chelsea tomorrow.
Yeah, and we've seen over the last few weeks when Jorginho came in there, I really fancy Jorginho as a player. I think he's probably one of the best passers in the game in Europe at the minute, but it's just the lack of legs in midfield that he gives you when he's playing there. You really need someone else in there that's going to be doing the filthy work for him because he's not quick enough, and I don't think he wants to do it. He doesn't have the tackling ability. He's a bit rash when he goes in for challenges as well, so he can gives away easy frees in bad positions for the opposition. So if Arsenal can win that battle in midfield, Arsenal have actually been playing the ball quite wide over the last couple of weeks. They've been spreading it well, getting the fullbacks forward, kind of like Liverpool or Man City or how they used to do it. Kieran Tierney's been getting forward as we would have expected from the start of the season. So if they can tear this Chelsea team apart and stretch them as much as they can, Jorginho will struggle to keep up with that play. So what Chelsea are going to need to do is control the possession. If Chelsea can control possession, there's not too many midfielders in the world that are better at doing that than Jorginho. But if Arsenal bring it, and if it's Arsenal on the ball, I would fully expect them to do damage to Chelsea if they can get their wide players ticking the way they have been in the last couple of weeks.
I'm sure for Arsenal, they would love to have used exactly the same system, exactly the same personnel as played against Man City in the semi-final, but they will be forced into one defensive reshuffle in that Mustafi is not available for this final. He's not going to be back in time. Aside from that, though, Enda, I think they probably go something similar. You try and get Saka on the ball, you try and get Kieran Tierney to release Aubameyang down that wing, and then I think the only other decision that really has to be made is, do you put Lacazette up front from the start, or do you start with one of the more youthful attackers like Nketiah through the middle? What way do you think Arteta's going to go?
I'd go with experience and go Lacazette down the middle. I know Lacazette is a weirdly unpopular figure at Arsenal these days, but I think he can do damage on these kind of days. And really what you need in a final is not... It's somebody who's going to be clinical when they get a chance to finish a chance. And it's about taking... especially when you have two top four teams going up against each other, everyone expects it to be this dynamic, fast-paced, chance after chance after chance. But largely, when it comes to the final, as we saw with Tottenham and Liverpool in the Champions League final a couple of years ago, it tends to be a lot more defensive. The tactics seem to just cancel each other out because they're playing a similar enough system. So the chances can be few and far between in this, in these kind of finals. So I would have the player who's most likely to take those chances first time, and I would have Lacazette above any other Arsenal player except for maybe Aubameyang in being clinical when it gets in, when he gets into the box and gets a chance to have a shot.
Well, our football coverage here on Off the Ball is with thanks to Paddy Power. Paddy Power giving us the odds on first goal scorer for tomorrow in terms of who might take that chance. And I think it's perfectly understandable. The two likely main attacking options tomorrow are best priced for first goal scorer at 7-2. That is Pierre-Emerick Aubameyang for Arsenal and Olivier Giroud for Chelsea. I'm guessing, a bit like Paddy Power are currently with their pricing, that Olivier Giroud is preferred to Tammy Abraham from the start tomorrow.
Yeah, he has been over the last couple of weeks, and you can see why, because I want to say his hold-up play is brilliant, because it is, but I don't want to also don't want to box Giroud into just a hold-up striker, because he is very good in front of goal, his touch is excellent, his hold-up play is excellent, but he's an all-rounder in terms of a striker. And if you're looking at his career since he left Arsenal, like it was the best decision he could have possibly made. I know he doesn't get as much game time as he might deserve, but when he gets that game time, he's a striker that's well worth having in your team. Because if you look at some of the other clubs in the Premier League, the likes of, say, Manchester United, when you look at their backup strikers, say Odion Ighalo, if you were to choose between Odion Ighalo or Olivier Giroud as your backup striker, you're choosing Olivier Giroud every time, because he proves time and time again, when you call upon him, then he can provide for you. But I suppose the one downside to him is that Tammy Abraham provides a lot more pace. And if you're looking at David Luiz, would you prefer him going up against a Giroud, who he can stand up and he can challenge in the air? Or would you prefer putting a Tammy Abraham, who's putting David Luiz on his back foot and getting in behind him on the half turn? I would probably prefer Tammy Abraham to face David Luiz, because David Luiz is so rash when it comes to challenges. But I would say over the last couple of weeks, because Giroud has performed for them, that Frank Lampard will go with Giroud.
Yeah, I think if Arsenal are going to score early in the game, Aubameyang is your man. You saw how potent he was with the chances that he got against Man City. Once again, you know, leading scorer for Arsenal in the Premier League. He's been so important for them. And it seems just that kind of shift out to the Thierry Henry-style position, where ostensibly he's on the left, but he drifts inside, seems to suit Aubameyang's game quite a bit too. It means he gets lots of space to run it.
Yeah, where do you think he ranks when it comes to Arsenal strikers of the past? Because obviously we've seen the stats that he was at 50 goals. He was the quickest Arsenal player to reach in his career. And it's ahead of Henry, ahead of Ian Wright, ahead of Van Persie, all these great strikers. Where do you think Aubameyang ranks in that? Because obviously he corresponds with Arsenal's worst ever period. So,
I think he has to be fairly high up there. I think Thierry Henry is just a step above the others. Ian Wright was a fantastic pure goal scorer. Robin van Persie had his injury concerns when he was at Arsenal, but when he was on song, he was a fantastic player and such a good player, a bit like Aubameyang, at creating his own chance and scoring out of nowhere. But I think you'd have to put Thierry Henry a step above even those two. But I think Aubameyang's definitely on Robin van Persie's level, if not even slightly better than Robin van Persie. Like, Aubameyang, in the years where van Persie was Arsenal's main attacker, I think Aubameyang would have still started in that team. And I think Aubameyang would have been thereabouts in the Arsenal invincible side too, even though, you know, obviously Arsenal would have had Bergkamp and Henry at the time. I think Aubameyang's the type of player you would have found space for.
Would he go and win the title for Man United in that season?
You're thinking he might do a Robin van Persie and hit his 30s and make a move up to Manchester and see if he can turn things around?
I'm not sure. Like, the jury is still out on Aubameyang. Obviously, his record speaks for itself when it comes to goal scoring, but I suppose he doesn't really capture the imagination the same way that the other ones do. I mean, like, Henry had so much to his game, and I suppose if you're comparing anyone to Henry's in the upper echelons of players to have ever played in the Premier League, with Van Persie, he was so dynamic in his striking. Some of his goals were spectacular, whereas all of Aubameyang seemed to be in around the 6-yard box or in the box at least. And I suppose if you're comparing another striker to him, it's sort of like Ruud van Nistelrooy. Like, obviously Van Nistelrooy is a great goal scorer, but he doesn't really capture the imagination the same way as the likes of Van Persie or Wayne Rooney or Henry would.
Well, Aubameyang's not going to give you what Thierry Henry gave Arsenal at the turn of the century, where, you know, with the exception of Ronaldinho winning a couple of Ballon d'Ors that were very questionable, Thierry Henry should have probably won at least one of two at the time. And Thierry Henry, we talk about Kevin De Bruyne last week and getting to 20 assists. Henry was able to do a 20 goal and 20 assist season, and that's only just been matched by Lionel Messi, probably the best footballer of all time this season. So Henry was on that kind of crazy level when Arsenal were at their absolute pomp at the turn of the century, going into the invincible season. I think for me, that's what Aubameyang's not going to give you. The thing about Manchester United is I don't think they currently need Aubameyang, because I think they now have three players up front who dovetail together perfectly in Martial, Rashford, and in Marcus Greenwood. And I would imagine that's not the place that United need to invest in their team. Would Aubameyang make them more likely to contest with Liverpool and Man City? Probably. But I think even with an extra striking option, I think Manchester United are still a bit away from those top two anyway.
Yeah, I'd probably agree with you there.
Well, Enda, we're looking at, obviously, the game itself. Let's try and pick a winner on this one, because you said at the outset you wouldn't be totally surprised if Arsenal were to win. Paddy Power calling this in Chelsea's favour. Are we seeing a shock, or are Chelsea going up to pick up the cup tomorrow?
It tells you where Arsenal are at when you think it would be a shock that Arsenal would win this game. But I think Arsenal have a good chance. Chelsea, in the last couple of weeks, have shown up when they needed to. But you just question, depending on the lineups. Obviously, it's really tough to judge these games when you haven't seen who's actually starting for each team. But Chelsea just have that little bit of inexperience when it comes to it. And I think if Arsenal start as good as they were in the last 4 or 5 weeks, then they probably should win this.
Yeah, I wouldn't mind putting a few quid on Arsenal at 11-8. I know that's to lift the trophy at any time tomorrow. The reason I'm thinking that way, a bit like you, Enda, if they play like they did against Man City, where they were in absolute lockdown mode and they were able to get Aubameyang into good positions to score goals like they did in the semi-final, I give the Gunners a real shout of beating that Chelsea team, who have struggled against pace and who've struggled to defend in recent weeks. What you don't want to happen is to get an Arsenal performance like we saw against Aston Villa, but I think an FA Cup final might be enough to sharpen the mind. So we're both kind of thinking Arsenal could pull off a shock. Last week, Enda, we weren't too far off, myself, yourself and Phil, in terms of picking our teams for the final day. Manchester United and Chelsea both getting into the top four as we expected. Leicester's season completely fizzling out. And at the bottom, Aston Villa just did enough by getting their draw against West Ham to condemn Watford and Bournemouth to Championship football for 2021.
Yeah, just about. I think the weirdest one was Tottenham doing a little bit of a leapfrog into that European spot, and Jose Mourinho celebration. He wanted to finish out that Amazon documentary in style. So, I mean, they almost lost it against Crystal Palace, which is absolutely crazy. But it was an interesting, if not less dramatic, finish to the season that we expected. I think Aston Villa did exceptionally well to stay in the Premier League this year, and probably if you're looking at the final three, they probably deserve to go down overall from what we've seen in the season. Norwich offered nothing in the Premier League this year. Bournemouth have offered very little over the last couple of years, and Watford, well, they can have three or four managers in the Championship if they want, because I don't think they'll be coming up to the Premier League anytime soon.
Well, their old boss, Javi Garcia, gone to Valencia, who liked to sack a manager as well. Don't be totally surprised if Javi Garcia ends back at Watford at some point in the Championship next season. They were the final standings in the Premier League. Leicester have to make do with a place in the Europa League. I think Jose Mourinho understandably celebrated. He has a love affair with that competition, having won the UEFA Cup, as it was then, with Porto, and then going on to win the Europa League with Manchester United 3 seasons ago, too. Enda, it's been great to look forward to the FA Cup final with you. I'm sure you can sit down with a cold drink around 5:30 tomorrow, still enjoy the magic of the cup.
It's the magic of the cup. It's a magical day, Will.
It is.
Are the royal family going to be there?
I'm sure they'll be there in some form on the TV. Well, did you not see the interview with the king-to-be? Well, his second in line to the throne,
on Peter
Prince
Crouch's
William
show
this week. Yeah, the look of a man who never drank a duff before, the way he cradled that pint.
A man of fine wine, I would say.
I'd imagine so. Well, look, his Aston Villa side have stayed up, so he can enjoy his pint of bitter after that. We'll look forward to the FA Cup final, and we'll speak to you again next week for all the fallout after the FA Cup final. This has been the Paddy Power Half Hour. If you're having a punt this weekend, the best of luck, and we'll speak to you next Friday afternoon.
Football on Off the Ball
with Paddy Power, chasing down the competition with the momentum of a Man United Champions League charge. Gamble responsibly. See dunlewy.net.
That was an OTB Podcast Network presentation.